Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. This is Pat Iyer, and today we're going to be talking about a subject that has great implications for attorneys and legal nurse consultants, which is technology addiction. I have with me John Krieger, who is a nationally and internationally recognized keynote speaker, author, consultant, and content expert presenter. He's been a guest on radio and TV and is hired routinely as an expert speaker for national and state conferences and has done a fair amount of teaching in the healthcare arena and specifically with nurses. He's got an experience going back 25 years teaching at the Rutgers Center for Alcohol Studies and is part of the faculty at the Center for Addiction Studies. An interesting segue to go from alcohol addiction to technology addiction, and John is expert in both of those areas. I know that his latest book, Turned On and Tuned Out, A Guide to Understanding Technology Dependence, is available on Amazon, a well-written book. And he's in the process of writing his third book on the impact of technology on anxiety, depression, violence, and predatory behavior. John has a Bachelor's of Science in Human Services, a Master's degree in Management, and he is a licensed clinical alcoholism and drug abuse counselor and a nationally certified prevention specialist. John is part of the National Speakers Association and one of the members of my mastermind, and he's been an active member of the group for probably about 4 or 5 years. I'm not sure, John, how long that's been. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really appreciate this.
We're talking today about technology addiction, and that's a term that many people may not be familiar with. What is that?
While technology addiction is not recognized in the DSM-5, again, a manual that's used to diagnose psychiatric issues, what we're seeing is the use of technology that parallels all the criteria for addiction in that directory. The interesting thing for me is, in my background with addictions, I started looking at the way individuals have used technology over the years and started paralleling that to the description of addiction regarding drugs, alcohol, or any other substances. And what I'm finding is that very often individuals are using technology the same way that drugs or alcohol have been used for years. It's for some, it's a portal to an alternative reality. And the problems we get into is that for a lot of young people, when there's nothing to do, they turn to their technology. They're primarily communicating through their technology, so they don't have face-to-face interaction. And so we're seeing it causing a number of problems for individuals around the world.
You make me think about a family that I saw in December. We were eating outdoors at a restaurant in Florida, and it was a mother and two really adorable kids. I have a fondness for blonde hair, blue-eyed kids. I thought I would have them when I got married, but I married a man from India, and there was really no way the gene pool was going to give me that. But I was looking at this mother and these kids, and then the father, who sat there the entire time looking at his phone, sending messages, writing emails, and I was positioned so that I could see her face, and she would glance up at him, and she had this look on her face of, why are you doing this? Why not pay attention to your meal? But she never said a word. She just sat there and stared at him and stared at the kids and stared at the phone. Is that an example of somebody who might be addicted to technology?
Very much so. There's just more and more studies coming out showing that this is becoming problematic for adults and for young people. We're finding an awful lot of students basically complain that they can't get their parents' attention because their parents are on their devices all the time. There have been a number of injuries, abuse cases, and neglect cases where parents have been, again, paying attention to the technology rather than the children. And in many instances, what we're seeing, or what I believe I'm seeing, and again, hearing from different therapists that I work with, is that individuals are not developing the social cues and the social awareness that they have because of it. So as a result, what folks are doing is they're actually losing the ability to read facial cues, body language. They seem to be inappropriate in some settings. One of my concerns, quite honestly, is that where are people going to come from in the future in the healthcare and helping professions because of the fact that we're not building many of these skills, these interpersonal skills that they need. From businesses, I'm hearing them talk to me, and they're telling me that they're having a very difficult time hiring young people out of college that can think creatively, that can stay with a problem for an extended period of time because they don't have the frustration tolerance. And also, they have a difficult time very often working in groups because of the fact they're used to working virtually. But when you come into a meeting and actually have to interact with folks and read what's going on with other people and communicate effectively in face-to-face communication, they have difficulty. Also, what we're seeing is we're seeing boundary issues around technology because very often folks are just not taking the time to develop relationships. If you watch young people at bus stops, for instance, in the morning, very often they're all on their own devices and nobody's interacting. And it's actually, there's a term for that today called being alone together, where everybody is there, they're in the same place, but nobody's interacting. So what I'm finding is even in businesses, and it's across the spectrum, where a lot of times there's an over-reliance on email and texting, and individuals will actually get into some type of a confrontation with each other via text or email, and rather than getting up and walking over a couple cubicles or into the next office to talk to the person, they try to resolve it through texting and email, which actually causes more problems.
What you said makes me wonder about the impact on nurses who are in the age where they've been raised with technology, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. nursing requires, as you know, very intimate contact, face-to-face, communication skills, problem-solving, and critical thinking. And
that's right.
We get involved in this from the medical malpractice world or the nursing malpractice world when faulty thought processes result in patient harm.
Sure. And I would say in having worked with social workers and teachers and therapists and nurses for the last 20-some years, when I look at them, and I'm teaching classes today, to some degree I'm concerned because a lot of the folks that are in the class can't put their devices away even during class to pay attention. And when I look at the different reports that have come out, there's been all types of different accidents as a result of this. There was an anesthesiologist in Texas who was investigated because a patient died on the table because he was looking at his iPad during some type of procedure. There's been other instances where individuals are not attending to the patient and the patient falls, or they don't. In one case I recall, there was some nurses that were looking at wedding photos on an iPad and didn't happen to notice the call bell being generated, and the person fell and received a significant injury, and the nurses were again held responsible for that and could possibly have lost their licenses.
So this is really a two-piece problem. A hospital could potentially block the staff's access to Facebook, and I know of facilities that have mm-hmm. done that, but that doesn't solve the problem if a nurse can access Facebook or other sites using a cell phone or using an iPad.
Sure, and we've had in some cases there have been instances where individuals have taken photos of a hospital setting or even a patient and put that up on a website. causing all kinds of issues around that. Again, legal, social, personal, there's just a whole variety of issues that come out of that. The confidentiality today of information being sent to the wrong address via fax or email, information being hacked into, possibly even just something as simple as hitting the reply all button when it should only go to one person. So there's a whole variety of issues here that can really cause us problems. Plus the fact what you have today too is you want to consider the fact that every client, every patient also has the ability to be video and audio taping the interactions they are having with professionals. And very often these things will turn up on YouTube or whatever without the professional's knowledge that they were even being recorded. So there's a whole myriad of issues around this.
You make me think about the case of the man in Virginia who's accidentally, or not realizing what he was going to get, but he turned on his cell phone so that it was recording his colonoscopy, and it was on the stretcher below the mattress. He wanted to make sure that he didn't miss any of the post-op instructions, but he got an hour and a half of an earful with some very disparaging comments made about him, his anatomy, a variety of comments that he listened to when the procedure was over. And he sued the nurse anesthetist, and he got a $500,000 verdict for his psychological damages. No physical damages, but the humiliation that he felt when he heard what was said about his unconscious body.
I think just the there's a whole variety of issues as we're going into this. There's a whole variety of issues that are starting to come up in it. One is the confidentiality piece. The other is the ability that on both sides of this, people can be recording information. In legal proceedings, it would not be uncommon for someone to sit in a courtroom and actually have a recorder in their pocket and be recording it, because you can record today with a phone, with a pen. I mean, there's all types of different devices that you could use to do this. The other issue, though, too, is just the distractibility. We seem to be totally distracted today, where folks are very limited in their ability to attend to much of anything. And so it really concerns me when someone has to be vigilant and really has to pay attention for extended periods of time. Have they developed the skills and the ability to do that? And also we have, again, the boundary issues when we go back to, I mean, I'm sure that, it happens on a regular basis where someone will walk into a restroom and you'll overhear a conversation that's a very personal conversation. I mean, that happens all the time today. But there's it's gotten to the point where there is no place where boundaries exist around our technology. And what happens, too, is a lot of individuals, as they're texting, tweeting, however they're communicating, very often what they're doing is they're sending out very personal information with the idea that only the person they're sending it to is going to get it. Well, that person can pass that information on. It could go on to a larger network. In one case, I remember there's a report of a nurse who was actually in a particular hospital setting. Every system, every organization has its gallows humor. And those are the type of things that, because you're internal to the organization, you understand that. But once it gets out, the context totally changes. And so, people can be offended, they can be hurt, they can be just bullied. There's all types of opportunities here. And like I said, in one instance, I remember the nurse was actually tweeting about how bored she was, and she wished that something would happen with a particular patient or whatever, because that would at least give her something to do. And, just again, the callous attitude and just the approach was just wrong for people to hear that and to see that. These are things that some people tell me they think, but when you put it in writing, it becomes very real for everybody.
So we have lots of possibilities of HIPAA violations of confidentiality issues. What I hear a lot about as well is personal injury cases that occur because a person is distracted yes. driving, for example.
Yes.
My son called me about 3 weeks ago. He witnessed an accident, and only because he was particularly attentive was he able to slow down in time to avoid being part of the chain reaction. But the police who came to interview him told him that this woman who drove through a stop sign and onto a two-lane road hitting a car was on her cell phone at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, texting and driving, texting and walking, people are distracted constantly. One of the major problems in major cities today is pedestrians just walking out into the traffic, oblivious of the cars. I almost hit a man in Philadelphia back a couple months ago because it was raining. I was trying to watch the street signs, the lights, the other cars, and this man was on his phone and just walked right out into the intersection. And if I hadn't have been paying attention, I would have had him. But he walked right out, never looked up, nothing, just right from his phone. Mm-hmm. On my way to a work yesterday, I was driving, and not too far from my home, there was a young man in the lane across me. It's a divided highway, but in the lane across from me, it's a residential street, not too heavily traveled. But here's a man standing in the middle of the road on the white line, basically, with his phone in his hand, looking at something, just standing there in the middle of the road. I thought, oh my God, he's going to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
But we just seem to be constantly distracted by this. And today they're using a variety of tools and methods to try to bring people out of that. First of all, I think there's some things that people can do. One is the fact that so many people are spending a lot of time on their technology that they're not able to sleep at night. And this, again, is contributing to their distractibility during the day. So one of the suggestions is to actually get off all of your devices. And it doesn't have the same with television, because it's across the room. It doesn't have the same effect. But if you're on your phone or on your computer, the suggestion is to get off of your phone about an hour to an hour and a half before bed, because that bright light in your eyes can actually delay the release of certain chemicals in the brain that trigger your sleep cycles. And then secondly, you tend to get your nervous system ramped up because of your interaction with the device that you're on. So to give your brain a chance to actually trigger the chemicals it needs and to calm, about an hour to an hour and a half before bed. Because I can't tell you how many people I talk to, again, professionals, that tell me they have sleep problems. When I ask them if they're on their devices up until bedtime, they usually say yes.
Mm-hmm.
A couple other things they can do, too, is I think putting some boundaries around it. Figure out some times when you can be on it, when you're not going to be on it. When you're on vacation, for instance, one of the things that I recommend folks do is determine there are specific times when you're going to check your email, and it's not every hour. Two or three, four times a day. And again, depending on your job, I understand some people are on call and whatever. But normally, when you're in a situation where you can, set some parameters around it so you can check it four times a day and know exactly when you're going to reply and build in some time to do that.
That's a terrific idea. I know how easily it is to slip into the habit of checking email like every hour, and then all of a sudden you're running down a rabbit hole and time is slipping by when you get caught up in something that is interesting, that you want to read a link or watch a video, or before you know it, time is just gone.
Yeah, and what it does is, the interesting thing about it is they've actually done some studies recently looking at the impact of using technology to sedate someone prior to a procedure. Instead of giving them a muscle relaxant or some type of a Valium or something. And what has happened is they are finding that the technology is almost as effective as some of those drugs. So it's just very interesting how we can get lost in it. They've even done some mm-hmm. studies, in our inability to get away from it, they've done some college studies where they've had students go tech-free from Friday night until Sunday night. And by Saturday night, some of the students are showing up in the infirmary with stress-related ailments.
Reminds me of withdrawal from drugs. How many times does it take if you've been using morphine or heroin before you start going into withdrawal?
Yeah, and I would say it's this, when I talk to folks and they tell me the symptoms of what they feel like when they can't have their phone, it's very similar to what I used to hear in the detox. How are you feeling? Well, I'm feeling shaky. I can't focus on anything, or I can only focus on wanting to get out of here and use. My heart's racing. My hearing is not as good as it should be. Any of these, you can pick all of them and say, this is what I'm hearing from folks that can't get to their technology. I've had people tell me it's, if they leave in the morning, it's like having a body part missing.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, just to give an idea, the connection that people feel with their devices.
I heard some trial lawyers in New Jersey talk about a case involving a man who received tweets from his girlfriend while he was driving a truck. And the question was whether the girlfriend was liable for the incident that led to this man who was tweeting while he was driving and ran over a couple on a motorcycle, both of whom ended up with amputated limbs. And it went through the court system in New Jersey, and ultimately the higher courts did not accept that she was liable. But one of the key things that came out of that that was revolutionary to me was that the hands-free concept of driving and talking is not any safer than holding the phone up to your ear. It's not where the phone is. It's the distraction and the loss of attention when you're driving that results in injury.
There's even a, there's even some studies that show that if you if your rear speakers are on in your car louder than the front speakers, so you don't have a balanced perception of the noise, you can actually increase your potential of an accident by a significant amount because of the fact your brain has to decide whether to pay attention forward or to pay attention to the sound behind you. So, you know, the distractibility today, I think, again, you can be distracted by eating a hamburger in your car or having a cup of coffee spill in your lap or any of these things. So to me, it's, it, you know, we are constantly being, the potential for distraction is there. The problem we're seeing, though, is that with the technology, the interactive aspect of it is becoming so compulsive for some individuals that they just cannot not do it. I had a class yesterday I was teaching on this particular topic, and I had a social worker come up to me, and he had attended one of my classes previously, and he actually said to me, he said, I really tried putting my phone in the trunk of my car before I went out driving because I feel so compulsive in answering it. I have to answer in spite of, you know, whatever situation I'm in. So I had suggested he put it in his trunk before he leaves. He said, I can't do it. I have to answer the phone every time it rings. But this is, you know, with this, just this whole issue of being ramped up all the time. If you're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, what does that do to your nervous system? So just from a health perspective, you know, there's no downtime for us. And so folks are being introduced to, for instance, I do some teaching in the area of mindfulness meditation. And individuals need to be able to step back periodically to take a breath, to just slow down, to get some control over their what they're paying attention to. There's a great researcher down in the University of Miami, Amadi Jha, who talks about the idea of taking a flashlight in a dark room and just flashing it all over, and that's kind of how our attention is today. And she talks about the idea that through meditation we can actually begin to learn to focus that flashlight where we decide to point it rather than just having it kind of control us. So this partial focused attention is something that we're seeing from lots of individuals, and teachers are telling me that they are having a very, very difficult time today because of the cheating that's going on, because of the distractibility of the electronics, the problems that are it's causing in the classroom, you know. And I worry about, quite honestly, again, students coming out of school today with the level of distractibility and just their over-reliance on the technology, and then having to go into the healthcare professions. Are they going to be prepared for it to actually be able to read social cues, to be able to respond to people appropriately, to work effectively in groups, and understand the needs of families going forward to be healthy and interactive?
I thought that schools were working on systems to basically have kids check their cell phones at the door and not allow them to have them in the classroom. Is that just a myth in my mind?
Probably more than you would want to say. In this, I work a lot with teachers in schools, and one of the things that I hear from them all the time, excuse me, in working with teachers and in schools, one of the things I hear all the time is that schools have a whole variety of policies. I had a question, I was teaching or presenting at a national conference for school nurses back about a year or so ago, and they had emailed me the question prior to the conference asking about the policies for school, what's effective. And when I started looking at policies across the country on usage of cell phones in schools, the policy went everywhere from we ignore it and pretend it doesn't a problem to confiscating them. So I would say to you that it's not uncommon for kids sometimes to carry two phones. So they'll turn one in and another one they have on them. It's not uncommon for a student to show up in the nurse's office and say, I'm sick. The nurse will check them out, say, I think you're okay. You can go back to class. The student stops in the restroom on the way back to class, calls their parent, says, come and get me. I'm sick. And the next thing you know, the parent's in the school overriding the nurse's opinion, taking the student out. Mm. So it's undermining authority. It's undermining decision-making. And unfortunately, we have, you know, in some cases, some parents are enabling it by just getting into whatever their kids want. I have a lot of times at the end of the sessions I do where parents will ask me, you know, how do I help my child to contain their cell phone? And usually I say to them, you're the one that bought it for them. So it's kind of interesting how parents sometimes don't feel that they can limit their child's usage.
I remember being in AT&T several years ago and watching this kid who was probably no more than about 7. He was standing at the counter and his parents were picking out his first cell phone. And I thought, wow, is a 7-year-old responsible enough to have a cell phone, a several hundred dollar instrument? We have a relative who's got a boy who's now 15, but when he was 12, one of his friends took his cell phone and threw it down the hall and cracked the plate of it. And his parents made him live with that cracked plate for quite a while before they were ready to replace it.
There's a number of stories that I hear of interactions, and again, just the whole addictive aspect of the technology. There are a number of cases currently here in this area and other areas of the country that I'm aware of where students have actually attacked the parent after the parent takes their phone away for some punitive action. And I have a lot of parents that will tell me that their child, who has never been a behavioral problem before, acts out just extreme acting out because of the fact they take their cell phone away. So, you know, and again, I look at this and think, you know, how different is this from the actions of someone who is actually addicted to some drug or alcohol?
That's a great comparison. Well, John, this has been thoroughly depressing. What can we say that will lighten up the atmosphere here?
I think it's a question of balance for me. I think we need to spend time talking to other people face to face. I think we need to spend time with family and friends and interacting with them without having the technology continually interrupt our conversations. I think we need to learn to pay attention and do other things that can be relaxing, focusing, and just get us to a place where we can interact in a more effective way. And so to me, it's an issue of balance. I'm not anti-technology by any stretch. I use it in my work in lots of different ways. But at the same time, I know that when I'm standing there and that thing's buzzing in my pocket, the person in front of me is the most important person at that moment. And I got to pay attention to them. And we have to be able to control ourselves enough to be able to do that.
So the silence mode or the vibrate mode or the on-off switch can be our friend in that situation.
Sure can. I mean, and how many people don't even think about the idea that they have a voice messaging system within their phone that can actually take messages? They don't have to answer it every time it rings.
How can our listeners find out more about you, John?
Sure. There's two different locations that I would say for you. The first one is a general website that we have, and that's Krieger, and that's K-R-I-G-E-R, consulting.com. So it's KriegerConsulting.com. And then the other one is TechDependence.com. This is a new one. It actually has a lot of resources there. We're putting up a lot of free resources, a lot of research papers and different articles that people can read, and that's in the resource section, and that's tech, T-E-C-H, dependence.com.
Well, thank you, John, so much for sharing your expertise with us. I'm going to think about you when I go back to my cell phone and turn on the ringer, which has been turned off during this interview, make sure that I limit the amount of time that I've got that phone on. Thank you for giving us some food for thought and helping us become more aware of the harmful effects of technology, something that we run into in terms of personal injury and medical malpractice cases, but I think you've given us a broader perspective on this issue to understand all of the different ways that this can affect a person's life.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of nuances and implications here that we need to consider and just learn more about. Again, I would encourage anybody who's interested to take a look at the book Turned On and Tuned Out. That's available on the website and also on Amazon. And I would just thank you, Pat, for the opportunity to be here and to spend this time with you. I'm honored to be on here today.
Thank you so much. This has been Legal Nurse Podcast with Pat Iyer. Please be sure to go to legalnursepodcast.com and sign up to be notified of future episodes. Download the transcript of today's program and leave a comment or review and tell us what you're interested in hearing about. Thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.